Killer Keller podcast. KillerKellerOfficial.com.
You need the Kellervision app. 24/7 mini documentaries, podcasts, live shows, DJ live streams, top fives, subscription packages, plus products for all your podcasts and street culture sports. Download it from the app store for free today.
Beatbox created.
Killer Keller.
And we're here to talk about world music and street culture.
Killer Keller podcast.
Let's go.
Ladies and gentlemen, Killer Keller podcast live and direct, central London, or as central as you need to be. All components locked. We're going overseas. Big shout out to graffitikings.co.uk. Hold tight, everybody. It's got the Kellervision app. Free download, iPhone, Android, from your app store for your street culture sports. The sporting art products you can grab as well. Talking of products to grab, Unlearning Volume 1 comes out on the 25th of June by this gentleman here. And my God, is it a pleasure. Because on the other end, we have a very vital component of the hip-hop culture, okay? If what you want to be when you grow up was not the B-boy if you did not have this man in your mind, in your mindset. He's one of the five key components of my childhood and growing up, and also being a part of the scene which we orbited around. It's a pleasure to have him on board. Producer, MC, extraordinaire, B-boy for life, The Evidence. How are you, my brother?
Great. Thank you for that introduction.
Tell me that wasn't the introduction that was best that was suited.
You know, the bar is high on introductions. You know, there's Sway, there's Quali. They're doing big introductions nowadays.
Yeah, I'll be very, very real with you. I feel like your production is in a handful of the higher echelon, which often, because of your lyrical skills, because the spotlight on intro was all about the emceeing, I think it doesn't get the full fucking shine. And that's crazy to me, because it's totally, totally falling in line with what's going on right now with the Conway the Machines. Like, I feel like this is like a huge forward thrust in a sound that you kind of paved the way for.
I don't know. There's a wide array of people who have inspired many. So if I'm on anyone's list, it's a true honor, honestly. My production has been something that I never fully controlled my own narrative of. And I'm gonna change that, and we can talk about what's gonna happen. But it's something that I truly love. Honestly, you could ask anybody who's been around me, the production, whether I was making the beat or not, it's just, I was the first one in the studio, the last one in the studio. Every time, I'm the guy who goes to mastering. I'm the sequencer along with whoever else. I'm just very interested in production and from all aspects, even coaching vocals, you know, and not even making beats, the whole other side of production. But, and you know, my best friend, one of my best friends of all time is Alchemist. So there's no lack of inspiration around me. It's a well that's pretty full. And so the production side hasn't, the notoriety of the production never kicked in as much as I would have liked, but I also came up around the era where the producer was more, I would say, closer to what the engineer is now. It wasn't always like, get your roses for being a producer. A lot of producers did a lot of work and never got the recognition before the era, I would say, ushered in through Kanye West and other people that really made the producer like an artist, you know? Yeah, and so, you know, I'm working on that, and we I don't know if now's the time or we talk about it later in the interview, but don't let me forget it if it comes back later, what my plans are for the future with my production.
Future is everything, man. A well-rounded B-boy artist, architect, you are. And if you go into the catalogue of Evidence, you know, beyond the Dilated Peoples, it's uncharted. It's crazy the levels in which you do go onto the studio. I mean, all that said, you know, as a song, the new joint, you said it, you coined it perfectly. Like, you're wondering now why you paid so much to, you know, polish so many tunes. You know what I mean? It's because
too much reverb. Why are you adding all this fucking reverb?
What's it called? The DFA fader? You know this one, right? The do fuck all fader.
It's fake.
Yeah, it's fake as fuck. Like,
what is it? The fader that does nothing.
The fader does nothing. They turn
call
it down.
It the Barbra Streisand fader.
Yeah, for real. But you know, those are life lessons in the career of an artist. Do you know what I mean? And you've got to have earned the 10,000 hours. And going through your catalog, looking deep into the lineage of it, it's 360, man. It's like you, it's like you're a funnel. You're like a funnel of creativity from a b-boy era, from the now b-boys, now the hip-hop of now. You know what I mean? It's the lineage is crazy.
Yeah, that's just meant to be a student, having a true love for what you're doing, really loving the music, not doing it for anything else. And I guess it sounds a little keep it real when you're talking about, you know, I don't do music for money, or I don't make music for bitches, or I just sit here and, but sadly, that's pretty much what it is. Like I make beats and I make music first thing every day. It's what I love. Somehow, when you do that, you find like-minded people. Monetarily, you'll be able to handle things, and you might get laid too. It might happen. So do it for the right reason, and the rest will come. I always believe that.
For real. So let's take it back. Let's go back from the beginning. So Venice Beach, am I correct in saying?
Yeah, I was born in Hollywood, lived there for a year. I don't remember that, obviously. And then my parents moved to Santa Monica, which is a neighboring city of Venice, which was nicer. And then a typical story, a divorce. And I moved with my mom to where she can afford. And that was Venice. So that's probably, you know, that's what me told me everything and gave me all the information that I push out is all from what I saw in this place coming up.
Yeah. What was the influences back then? What was your first introduction to hip hop and the culture?
Graffiti. Before that, seeing people dancing, you know, and seeing a circle and people dancing at the beach, and then me being with my mom or my father, and then they could see how interested I was in this song or in a trance by it. And so they probably asked some, you know, for me. And then we're going to the warehouse or Music Plus or Tower Records or these places that were selling, you know, cassettes. And they're buying that song or that album for me with that song on it that I like so much. And then I'm running around the house to imitate that. And so just a lot of imitation. I've said it before, I think I'm lucky. When Beat Street came out, Wild Style, you know, Crush Groove, all that shit, it was all based, we had Breakin', that was based on the West Coast. All the prominent movies that were the good ones to me were all based on the culture of New York and East Coast and hip hop's origin, where it started. I was lucky enough to, when I saw those movies, it wasn't like it was totally foreign to me, because my neighborhood was lit up with graffiti. There was dudes dancing. They might have been pop locking more than they might have been breaking, but there was still the same thing happening, you know. And so it really wasn't like I lived in a rural suburb somewhere and I had never seen this. I was like, oh yeah, that's what I'm doing at the beach to me. And so it kind of like reaffirmed what I was seeing was dope, you know. So I was all the way in. But for a long time, I wasn't trying to participate in the culture. I was through graffiti. But I was skateboarding. I was doing all the shit that comes with Venice Beach, you know. And then when I moved next door to QD3, who was Quincy Jones' son, who was a prominent rap producer at the time.
Crazy, you know, yeah.
Yeah, one of the greats. And so then I got invited into his garage, like I'm sitting in now, which I basically copied. And in a house in Venice, right? Like my whole shit is QD3, basically. And, and I saw how rap was getting made. And not only that, I saw rappers who I had heard of and seen, and some of them really big ones coming through. So it was Everlast. Got to see Ice Cube in the driveway next to my house. What the fuck? You know what I'm saying? And madness. Shit like this. Yeah, like what the fuck? And because of that, all my friends knew. And so they want to come over. So maybe we're there. We could go smoke, drink, listen to do graffiti, listen to fucking dope rappers, producers. It was like a 12-year-old's what the fuck, you know what I mean? That brought Alchemist over, that brought Will.i.am over, that brought Red Foo over, that brought DJ AM, all these people coming through because QD3 next door to me.
Yeah, that's a
probably
dream.
Really didn't like me that much. Be honest, man. Nobody really liked me.
Why? Explain
just,
why.
You go to Ev's house, then you go to the QT3 house. Yeah. Nobody had a rap studio at the time. There was no, that was unheard of, you know?
But this was a golden era of hip hop that, you know, was literally just passing through the doors. And that must just have, it must have just blown your mind with what was potentially possible from within those four walls.
Yeah, and then I took some beats I got from him and ran around the city. Like, I got beats from QT3, and that's how I met Rocka. Yo, I got QT3 beats, let's do it. And that led to Dilated. And so, yeah, I owe Q a nice dinner. not fake nice, like Benihana's, like real nice, like something real.
Yeah, you know, the proper stuff, the stuff that some royalties are made of. Yeah. The Dilated People era of your career, which is where I think internationally most people will recognize your voice, the name, the principles of what Dilated was to a lot of people was a bit of a roll call. It was a war cry. It was a war cry from a B-boy perspective. Do you know what I mean?
No, elaborate.
Well, because the way that it came across for overseas and landed, you know, it was of the Raucous Records era. And I'm talking more about, you know, I'm talking more about the 12-inch EPs and the just that transferal of the Backpacker era.
For sure. We had a good role in that part, you know, dropping Work the Angles and Third Degree and Triple Optics and Main Event and all that. Those 12 inches and mini EPs rang out so hard, we ended up getting a record deal through it, you know? So it was an early lesson about independence. And I unfortunately strayed away from it as we got a deal with Capitol, you know, but I'm grateful because it was still the root of what I did. The fundamentals of that never left us. And so when I returned to that off of a major label and went back to starting Evidence independently, I had already been there before. And so I'm grateful for that.
Yeah, because you've already run the course.
Yeah. Yeah.
What was the deal with removing yourself somewhat from the major label situation? You mentioned that. What was the thought behind that?
We didn't remove ourselves. Actually, we're kind of an anomaly in the sense that we were on Capitol Records.
Yeah.
Which really wasn't a rap label when we went there. They had Beastie Boys, about it. Mm-hmm. And we went there for that reason. We had choices. We could have gone to Interscope or other places that had offered us that were more seasoned in rap. Right. But we liked the openness of Capitol and the money was better, so we went there. But we finished our fucking contract with them, four albums. And the fifth album was slated to be a live album or a best of album.
Gotcha.
So we finished our contract. It was like literally like crazy.
That's mad. Not a lot of people do that.
So there was no calling for to like go find another label and continue that. By the time it was done, saw where we fit into this game. And it had been a pipe dream to try to continue that. It wasn't going the direction of us at that time.
Yeah, you hear those stories. Oh, actually, sometimes you witness it, don't you? You see acts and bands play out in a certain way. We were just like, yo, man, like, that doesn't feel natural, you know?
Yeah, not everybody is meant for a fucking big label. Yeah. And with that said, I would tell everybody to try to sign to a big label. A lot of people say, well, you know, you're smart and you've learned this independence and there's way more money to be made over in the independent for what you're doing. And there's a lot of truth to that. There really is. But how would you really know? If you might work well in a major system, you might make a hit fucking record. It might bring you all everything you ever dreamed about. So it didn't pan out. It worked well. We made a career. I own a house. Things worked out well. But it wasn't the best fit for us. For other people, it might be the best fit. So I would say if you're young, go for that shit. Find out. You know what I mean?
You've got to go through the experience. You've got to have you've got to cut your chops and learn that stuff, right? Super important.
Why not find out? Yeah.
So moving on from there, you know, getting into the more independent stuff once again and your own individual music. This is certainly where the 360 of Evidence kind of kicked in. You know, this is where it felt like you had harnessed all the lessons that you'd learned up in these kind of early stages, and with the first album, with Dilated being on the major, this kind of formed your, for me personally, when I even listen back to it now, it's like, yo, this is so much more well refined. It's almost like you had the idea was being tweaked all throughout the journey.
The craziest part about Dilated Peoples is the best songs on every album to me were our solo songs. We always had one or two each where I wouldn't be on Rocket's song and he wouldn't be on mine. And those really, or I wouldn't say they're the best. They had the most identity. Mm. Because Rocket could really, Rocket wants to speak on wild shit. He's very educated, smart. He wants to warn people on certain shit. Other shit he wants to subliminally throw at you. He's very calculated and a great writer with a great rhythm. So, and a great voice. Rock is amazing. So the when he got to just do him by himself, I think he shined. And when I got to be myself, I think I was coming through as this is who I am. And so I think going solo was the smart thing, you know, doing solo records, not going solo, but doing solo records was a way to finally establish who we were as individuals, not just with the hair and the one who jumps in the crowd and the cool DJ, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I got to go with you on that one, because there was a lot that was going on. Where, you know, big up Rucker, big up Babu, because Babu had his thing going on with Beat Junkies, and then Rucker had his thing going on, you know. And it was, for me, it had this kind of like Wu-Tang-esque formation. Do you know what I mean? Where you could go about doing individual projects. You know, this was almost like the launch pad. Right?
Yeah, that's platform. That's what we called it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry, sometimes for everybody watching, there's a little latency sometimes. So if we talk over each other, it's, I love you.
yeah, there is, isn't it?
on the platform, there's a, you know, on the liner notes, it says, look out for our solo albums coming soon. And that's 2000, right?
Yeah.
So my solo didn't happen until 2007.
Yeah, that's right. And man, yeah. And maybe this is one part of the, I mean, would this be contributive to like being on a major label, that things can sometimes be staggered, where if you're on, you know, you're independent, the reaction is a lot more quicker?
I'm still learning independent, honestly, because there's different levels of independence. I think people need to realize that it's not just, it's a broad, you know, it's, you can't just stroke it and it covers everything. It just, there's labels who are independent who are acting as mini majors. Mm. There's some people who are independent who are literally doing everything themselves, everything. So it goes from DIY all the way up to like solid distribution, marketing and promotion, video budgets, etc.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. And everything can stand in the way of time, can't it? So the smallest thing could trigger like a crazy delay.
It just depends on what works for you. If you're down to not just be the musician and be the boss and do everything, go to the plant and improve your records and artwork and registering songs, BMI and ASCAP, and getting your shit on streaming and videos and your YouTube channel. If you want to do it all yourself, and there's a lot of artists who do that, especially right now more than ever, you're going to control the narrative of what you're doing the best. There's no filter between you and them. The problem with that is it'll be more limited, mm-hmm. It'll be smaller. But lately I've been contemplating and figuring out, is smaller and passionate more powerful than big numbers and kind of airy, you know?
I feel you. And maybe.
And on a money level too, not on a real business level too, not just props, you know what I mean? So.
Yeah, I do know what you mean. There's this will probably sound like a high class problem but I'm thinking perhaps as artists that are already established, going down an independent route actually doesn't fare too bad if you've already established a name. You know, for independent artists that are trying to get on board now, like you said, I think the major label route, actually, you should really give it a shot.
Do you want, some people got to touch the pot and get burned. Some got to do it, you know?
Yeah, I'm feeling that. And also, a lot of major labels, they do pull off the tricks that a lot of independent labels do naturally through the struggle.
There's that. Well, industry planting or whatever, right? Industry plant, that type of shit.
Yeah.
Like you're signed for 2 years. You've been signed here for 2 years, but we won't say any. Or we'll sign you, but we won't tell anybody for a couple of years. We'll fund it, but we'll kind of make it appear like it's growing organically.
Totally.
That's really what a high level independent level label is anyway. So
yeah, that's true.
That's like their minor leagues. You know what I mean? Before you go to the majors or whatever. I'm not mad at that. If anything, that's kind of like artist development a little bit. I kind of fuck with that.
Oh yeah, that's true. It is. It's the slow burn, isn't it? It is the development space, the holding pad for trying out ideas on a retainer.
Music's still got to be good. They got to translate either way. So, you know, either it's going to work or it isn't.
That shit always scared me back in the day, you know, the idea of a development deal and then knowing full well that the money numbers are ticking away, you know what I mean?
Different time. There was no internet to confirm that you were onto something.
Yeah,
you'd only get that through a show or through wherever you go to try to get yourself validated. So
it's interesting we've gone down this road a little bit, actually, because the creative space now with the internet means that individuality, which is what hip hop has founded itself on, it's forefathers, you know, they ingrained in our head that style and individuality is everything. Like with the internet, the way it is, it's almost like, well, I'll give it 3 days before it's been plagiarized. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. It's, I mean, it moves faster, but I love the A to B shit, man. I just love that you can feel something, put it there and let it fly, you know? It's
the best, yeah.
It's fucking so dope, man. So dope. Like, yeah, so good.
Makes you feel alive, doesn't it?
The downside is like you expect that everyone from your IG or from your Twitter is going to know. But that's the problem, is like one tweet or like one post is not enough sometimes to get where you want it to go in your mind. So then you have to figure it out. It's not like it broadcasts to a broader thing. It's just for your people who are really engaged. And say you have 100,000 followers on something. How many of those are really... maybe 5,000, three, you know what I mean? And so it's like, that's where like these labels and these other people pick up after you and they can help push it. And that's why they're good, is because they can get it out. But like I was saying before, well, maybe you don't want to reach everybody. Maybe you're not into fucking going to the club and pulling on girl shirts and trying, you know, and maybe you just want to fucking kick it and push it out there and see where it goes. And I think there's something really powerful from what I'm seeing with Alchemist and a lot of my homies who are really, once again, controlling their narrative by putting the music out through their shit, the way they want, how they want.
Yeah.
And training their audience and training the audience to be like, this is how it's getting done over here.
Yeah.
Like maybe it doesn't reach quite as far, but it's reaching far though. It really is.
It is, and you're absolutely right. And this is what I was kind of coming to at the start. Like, you're part of a new wave of people that do control the narrative. And I'm hazarding through my personal experience that the experience of the past actually, you know, it gives you more incentive to own that shit. But, you know, West Side Gun, Conway the Machine, Static Selector, all these people, Alchemist without question, like these people that you are you know, running parallel with and collaborating and working alongside, this is like the new, it's the new call to arms. And it is all about owning your narrative.
I think that's so important, you know, just to be able to control it, because having a meeting of a bunch of people talking about your shit in a boardroom, and you're not there and they're all just, they have a job and a salary and, you know, it's going to get fucked up somehow. They're going to fuck it up.
Yeah.
Now, can they get it a little bigger than you could have? Maybe they can. And that's why maybe it works. You know what I mean? But at the same time, it's like, man, look at the people who took their shit and kept it. They're after they leave Earth. They, you know what I mean? They really did it the way they want to do it. And so.
Yeah.
Salute to them and salute to the people who do through the big system and have success also.
Yeah,
whatever
yeah.
your goal is, really.
And like you say, I think it's about balance, you know, and moderation within your career, knowing when to turn the heat up and go down that road, and when to preserve and honor, you know, the integrity of your name and the brand and the narrative, and, you know, all these things come into play, don't they?
100%. And it ain't just the music, it's everything else too, you know. Do people like you? They buy into you as a human. You know, a lot of people who could rap, like rap for real. I produce people all day. I've seen crazy shit. I've also seen people who've blown my mind who couldn't figure it out.
Yeah, that's a heartbreak. That can be quite heartbreaking, can't it?
Crazy. It ain't just music.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. It's more than, it's a, you know, you can't bottle it, but you kind of know what it is. And it's sometimes it just hits you and you're just like, wow, that's, they got it. But then do they have can they go the distance?
I love that when I get it.
Oh, man. Yeah, as a producer, yeah. You must actually spend a lot of time cultivating and building up projects with particular, I mean, Baldy James, the feature on the new single, All of That Said, he most definitely is a new act in my ears. You, as a producer, that must be the greatest gift, to be able to introduce an artist.
I'm not, you know, he put out an album last year. It was revered. It's one of the high albums of the year, right. Called The Price of Tea in China, produced by Alchemist. And I was featured on a song called Grey October, and we shot a video for it. So this is really a continuation of somebody who I'm new to building with, but really love what they're doing. And Boldy is cold, man. He's just a cold rhymer, man. And beyond that, a dope motherfucker. Like, really fuck with Boldy. And so, yeah. Like, he's great, bro. And he put me on his shit. Like, yo, it's like a super honor. And so, like, when I was making this one, that song, All of That Said, was going to be the intro to the album. It was just me, one verse. And then I was like, you know what? Nah, fuck that. And we're putting Boldy on this shit. And then he ate it up, showed up for the video for me, just proved that he's a G, and he's solid, man, like that. And he's going to continue to grow. Trust me, if you haven't heard, you're kind of late a little bit, because he's doing his thing.
God damn it, I'm late on that one. Damn.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. There's so much content coming out at the moment.
That's what I'm talking about. He's building his world right now. You know what I mean? Not everyone knows to join it on the day that he says it's open. Maybe it take. That's the beauty of this independent. Now you might go back and you're going to...
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, and then you might be on the team. Like not just like Fairweather in a minute if you keep jumping in, and then now he got a new one.
Yeah, that's right.
And it's like, it's beautiful like how that shit really works. It's a slower burn, but it could be iller.
Yeah, you're right. You're right, and it's so organic and cool. And can I just go back to the tune, man? Like All That Said, man. For it to have been an introduction, I can understand. I can picture it. But bro, like when I hear that beat, it just takes me straight to LA. It's like it's got that epic Americana heavy, like it's rock sick, bro.
That shit is hard.
It's hard.
Yeah, shit is super hard. Yeah, and that's one of the few ones I produced on the album. You know, so that was tight. Got to see my vision all the way through from the beginning to the mix.
Yeah, it's fire. Talk to me about the production, the technical side of it. Like, what do you look for? What do you look for in beats and sounds and samples? This is one of the most broadest questions on the planet, by the way. So you can go as deep as you want.
No. I mean, yeah, I look for shit that I like. But no, really, that's a good question, because there's so much to that. I'm into nuance lately. Mm. I've moved into what's under the hood of a car. So before, or a lot of people, you want to drive a car, right? You just give a fuck if it works or not. That's why you have a car. But there's a whole world of people who talk about the hood and the wires they used and what's connecting to this and this piece right here and how it works with that. And that's like a secret society of people who are all interested in the engine of the car. Yeah. And so I've moved, I feel like I've moved into that conversation, some nerd shit with the people that I talk about. These little intricacies and these little nuances that are gigantic to me that everyone else just hears as normal, you know? And so when I talk about this type of stuff, you could end up sounding kind of like an idiot because it's like, I'm talking about the level of the brightness of the snare, or these drums are sitting two on top and this could be blended, or, you know, things that just like a movie editor can't go watch a movie because they're looking at the cuts of every movie and, oh, yeah, that didn't dissolve. And I'm just watching the movie. I just like the movie. I don't know what the fuck you're talking about. But they're watching it like, I can't even bear this. Look, the sky in this scene doesn't match to the sky in this scene. You know what I mean? And it's like, I've moved into that place where it's, I'm all into the intricacies. And so what I look for is innovation, but not like reinventing the wheel innovation. Like, wow, look at how this dude is filtering this shit. Or look at how the segue is going into this. Or look at how they're making the drums are there, but look how they made it sound like it's part of the loop instead of a big boom beat. And all these little things that really nobody gives a shit about, you know, but that's what I'm looking for right now. And so it's going to make my shit interesting on that side, you know?
Yeah, it's the devil in the detail. It's the things, and, you know, if there's a problem, someone will tell you. If there isn't a problem, they don't say nothing. If you're working on that premise of, like, just making the thing so on the money that it becomes fluid, isn't it? It's the production value that takes it to that place where the heads that really know production will give you a head nod like, yeah, I see you.
Right, or making conscious decisions. Like, I think I've proven I know how to make a mix and I know how to make something that'll play good in a big room. You know what I mean? And sound compute. Or if we ever got on the radio, that we wouldn't just drop off when our shit came on. Like, I did a lot of that throughout my career, but I'm really kind of, I guess what you're saying is coming back to a full circle. I'm almost like, doing my new demo, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, and listen, Ev, I feel like in this conversation there's a lot of skirting and back and forth, and I feel like my motives behind this is because it's a life of many lives in a career sense, and you're in this place now where, for those people that hadn't checked you for a minute and are jumping back in, they'll be forgiven. Like, your lane is so tight. It's almost like you're still evident, still doing it. It's almost like you can picture where you are. The narrative hasn't changed, but what has significantly changed is the approach.
I agree, like you're saying, the
production, like you still wear the baseball caps. You still roll with a polo shirt when you need to. Do you know what I'm saying?
There is hair under there. Just
yeah. But it's like it's four-wheel drive. So in putting it in context with what my audience, I guess, would either know you from or know you of, it's like it's crazy the similarities, but they are so many different mini lives within yours. It's actually... It's such an intriguing conversation.
Evolving publicly, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
It's weird. But, you know, it's what else am I going to do? Not just stay in a room and then try to unveil it all at one time. That's not going to work. So my influences are huge. When I was younger, my age, I was always the youngest out of a whole crew of people older. So my instinct would manifest on the microphone through trying to be harder, trying to be deeper, or trying to be something. Never not being who I was, just not being like truly who I could be. You'll have a kid who's hanging out with older kids and he's stepping, you know, he's tripping over his shoelaces and he's weird. But then you see him in his environment with his friends and he's the man over there. He's not even acting like the same person he's acting over here because he's free. You know what I'm saying? He's really being who he is. I was doing a lot of the other way for a long time. So there's What I don't regret is that there was nothing I ever said or did anything that wasn't who I was. I didn't front to be anything else. But
never. I just do not.
But I was putting sauce on it that didn't need sauce on that. So finally, now you get older, my voice is deeper, I'm more confident in who I am.
Yeah.
Father, you know, all kind of different shit where it's like, I feel like I could finally give the audience who I am. And maybe they'll like it better or worse, but it'll be more redeeming to me to put it out and share.
Yeah, bro. I feel like I hope for, I really hope for. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, perfect.
Yeah. I really hope for artists to develop themselves and continue their journey without feeling floundered by obstacles or having to deal with stuff that they don't need to, and still manage to make it over the finishing line of a project, and they're able to continue. So they've learned, like what we're talking about here is evidence in 2021 that has suddenly you own your own skin because of the experiences you've been in. And a lot of artists have that, you know, when they get to a point with no return, they're comfortable with the skin they're in.
If you can make it to that point, I think it's a transparent era right now to try to hide behind a middleman and have them groom your image is, it's just so obvious for me.
Yeah.
So best to just ride out with who the fuck you are and find the people who like you for who you are. I think that's the best time right now.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Because regrets don't become regrets, do they? The regrets are just like they're things that happened that you learn from. And was there a point in that you can define in your career span where you were just like, oh, well, this is me now?
The solo stuff, the Weatherman LP, my 2007 record, that felt like I could control my narrative. And if you listen to Crown of Thorns, which was Rocker's solo album, Slept on Record.
Oh, shit.
Man, that shit, I'm proud of him on the record. It's great. You know what I mean? It's like, you know what I mean? And that's where the dilated umbrella was beautiful. It was like, okay, we're still dilated peoples, you know, but you're the man for that. And I'm doing me over here. I had the song for my mom, I Still Love You. My mom passed in 2004. I was trying to figure shit out. I made that song. We had the dilated album 2020 that had Back Again and You Can't Hide, You Can't Run, and some good songs on it. People fucked with that shit.
Yeah.
I wanted to put this solo song on about my mom passing away. Rocka and Babu were all for it. Whatever you want to do, bro, it's your solo song. Cool. I put it on, played the sequence. That shit sounded fucked up. And I was like, oh, yeah, I haven't established my identity because I can't even talk about a song with my mom and without it sounding fucked up. Like we're coming out of left field, you know, with all these anthems, you know, and so that's when I was like, I want to make a solo record, Weatherman. I made that. That became the last song on that album, and it felt right. And so I was like, yes, okay, now here I am. So like, just because of that song was like what led me to the solo career.
Wow, that's crazy, man. Yeah. Because you know, once you established your individuality in your own solo career, I mean, you had been collaborating with the likes of Kanye, you were already in the mix with certain movers and shakers. You mentioned Will.i.am, who from my accounts and what I remember, he was a b-boy as much as a rapper, like
crazy.
Yeah, I mean, and he used to battle the fuck out, but people used to, you know, they knew him as a battle rapper as well.
100%.
Yeah.
He used to battle Ahmad. You know, I don't know if you know Ahmad, but he had a crazy rapper from LA, but he had a song back in the day when I was young. I'm not a kid.
Of course. Yeah.
Everyone knows him for that, but I know him as Sick MC. Mm. Will.i.am Ahmad would battle every day. Like, yeah, it was aggressive. It was that time. Brand Nubian was out. Shit. It was different.
Oh, that's crazy. Your collaborations were right across the board, man. Like, what was it like working with Kanye at the time?
That was cool. It was just early. It was before all the shit. So I just got to see a different side of him. And in all fairness, man, people say he's wild and crazy, but he was there before anybody knew him. So that's just how he is. That's not an act, you know?
Yeah. So.
It was a little different when he was demanding all this shit and nobody knew him. So he sounded like a crazy person. But now that it worked out, he just sounds like what's the word we predict the future? You know what I'm saying? Prophecy man. You know what I mean? He fucking jokes on you.
for real.
Yes. Like, nah, he'd been the same way, man. Just crazy, arrogant. He got a little something's off with him. I'll never know what it is, but he's like it's like a tick, something a little different.
Yeah. Maybe on the spectrum somewhat, maybe slightly.
Yeah. I wonder what he'd be diagnosed as.
Before
bipolar, whatever. Maybe it was always bipolar, whatever he is, but you know, in his arrogant moments, in his wild moments, an asshole, in his love for the music and like being a really skilled individual and passionate, amazing, you know, and then all these things keep you kind of on your toes because you never know. It's like some real mafia boss type shit, you know what I mean?
So, yeah, you don't know what you're going to get depending on what day and what movie. Yeah, I feel that. Are there any other producers that you could probably tarnish with the same brush as this, that you're like, yo, they're not anything like what you'd expect in the studio? These guys are on some another level.
No, most people were pretty true to who they were. Redman was weird when I met him, when we worked with him.
Redman was weird to me when I met him, man.
Yeah, you're crazy. But yeah. You know, this was on our album that never came out. So I worked, you know, in Redman. There is a dark side, Redman.
Right.
You know, I was driving him around in my mom's Ford Taurus, like going, taking him to Red Foo's house to record. Just put that in the sentence, write that in the sentence. It just sounds crazy.
That's crazy. You've got to be a bit kooky, haven't you, to be like.
I got to watch Eric Sermon make a beat from scratch right in front of me. That was amazing.
What?
I've seen Premier make beats, you know, and let's not talk about Premier. Obviously, he's the goat. Yeah, for real. And so, you know, and I'm blessed because the Alchemist, I got to meet Premier and become friends with Premier and work with Premier. Like, that shit is crazy. Still, till this day, I'll never snap out of that.
Yeah. No.
And so, you know what I mean? So, it's just like awesome experiences that helped me when I go sit down. But mainly, you know, mainly it's Alchemist. That would be my number one.
Alchemist is they got rid of the photocopier when they created him, man. Like his blueprint. I mean, it's talk to me about working with Alchemist, bro.
It's never been work. There is no work. It just happens.
Love it.
Yeah. There's no work. He could rap. He could really rap, actually. And, you know, some people know that and some people have no idea, but he could really rap. And so.
Well, he was in the Hooligans, right?
Yeah. And even then he was killing shit. Let's be honest. So the with a little girl voice, you know, like he was killing shit. I think if you're a rock producer and you're producing a band, and you're talking to the guitar player and you're saying, hey man, you're not playing it right, or you were playing it, I heard it. Well, the guitar player can go, here, you show me what the fuck you're talking about then. And the producer can maybe not play it as good, but he can go, I'm kind of talking about like this. Then the band's gonna respect the producer more because, yeah, he might've not played it as good as they can, but he's not like, he's real, you know what I mean? And so that's the same way it is with Alchemist, is like he could rap. So if you're gonna go into the booth, better be like tight, because he can hear what you're doing. It's not like a mystery to him.
Yeah, because he's got all of his skill sets. He knows what's going on.
Like, there's not. Oh, that's a two-bar pattern. Oh, then you did two there, and then you made up for it by doing six here, and that equals eight. I get it. You're not shocking him. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, you know. So. You gotta
imagine. Can you imagine, like, the, you know, shocking him? Actually, shocking
sometimes,
him.
There's people I've seen him like, what the fuck? You know, it happens. Planet Asia comes out of the booth, Conway or somebody. What the fuck? You know, but the I think the lesson of it with him is like, get it tight before you go in there, because this is going to be it once you record it.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, these are producer stories that rarely get cited, and it's just fucking awe. It's awe inspiring. That shit inspires me. That's like, yo, that level of what you provide, that level and attention to detail still matters, even in this era of sample packs, etc.
And I could, yeah, right. I can tell you this too. If you're, you know, wondering, like, if you're trying to impress Alchemist or whatever, he's much more concerned with emotion and what's coming out of it than the technical side of it, you know? So mm-hmm. It's like, you don't need to wow him with syllables. It just needs to feel right.
And what about you? What's your priority? What do you want out of collaboration?
With him or just when I write?
Just when you write, when you collaborate with people, when you're in the studio working.
The writing, I don't think about the technical side as much as other people do. So either that's my greatest asset or it's my biggest fault. I came up on wild technical shit. Biggest Pharoah Monch fan.
Mm.
Two thumbs, it's me. You know what I'm saying? Like,
hell
it's
yeah.
Like, right. And I came up on Freestyle Fellowship and Hieroglyphics and Farsight and a lot of shit that was no slouch. You know what I mean? And so I can do that, but that's not what's in my heart. And so what I do is what feels right to me. And I think that's what's got me attracted people to me, is I'm just doing what feels right.
Your now, lyrical maybe there play, could be a bro.
Time I push that. There could be times I push the envelope harder and maybe somebody's looking for that. Can you double time for me? Can you do this for me? Can you do that? But to me, it's like, okay, maybe you should have someone else do that, because I'm just, and so maybe I'm limiting myself. Sometimes I agree with them. And then the other times I'm like, yeah, but at least I stand for something, you know, and at least I'm true to what I'm doing. You know?
That's your style. Like with your lyrics, there's a play on the consonants and on the vowels, and the delivery is crafted. You're an artisan.
Well, to me, I liked music most. Music was the winner to me. I liked music. I mean, I liked watching people freestyle or battle, but really I loved A Tribe Called Quest, or I loved Kanye West, or I loved music. You know, and in a lot of the music, I never really listened to Q-Tip and was like, ooh, bar, you know. I never like it was never like judging him like that. It was just like, I love this fucking song so much.
Yeah,
I don't know what to do with myself, you know what I mean? And you know, like Kanye, you know, they say you could rap for anything except for Jesus. Like he couldn't even get the words out right. But like, yeah. I felt that so much though. It was like, yes, you know what I mean? And so it's like, sometimes to me, like the less technical things are the greatest ones, you know, like people who just rhyme two, like they rhyme one time and then they rhyme the next sentence with that two bars and then they move on. They don't do 4 and 8 bar schemes. They just boom, conversation. I feel like you're right in front of me talking to me when you rap like that.
That's so what you sound like.
That's less technical. That's technically less technical. But to me, sometimes that jumps right over somebody who's like showing you so much that they can do it.
Yeah. It's style over substance, isn't it?
To me, it wins. Who the fuck am I?
Evidence, it's been a fucking pleasure, bro.
This has been amazing.
It's been good. I've really enjoyed chopping it up, getting back in the mix. I really appreciate you joining me and the gang over here on the Killer Keller podcast.
Hopefully I can put out more records so I can talk to you more.
Yeah, well, please do. More records, yeah.
No, for real, though, it's a pleasure to talk to you. Your name has been coming up for many, many years. So respect.
Enough respect, my brother, and I really appreciate you coming on. Thanks so much, Evidence.
Peace.
Unlearning, Volume 1, LP, 25th of June. Evidence, hold tight. Don't forget, sharing is caring. Tell a friend to tell a friend, and don't talk to anybody I wouldn't, all right? You stay lucky, people. Peace.